You are listening to the Punkish Podcast. I don't know what episode this is because I'm so far behind. But don't worry, people. I'm going to get caught up this weekend. Anyway, back, welcome back to the Punkish Podcast. This is featured editor Josh Tilly, and we are talking about polygamy. Sammy B!
Oh, God.
We were talking about polygamy before the show started. Sammy B, would you ever consider having like 7 or 8 husbands and just do everything for you and you get to sit around the house and relax?
No, because one husband is exhausting enough.
that's a great question. The thing is now, and actually, Sam, you and I know somebody that does this, and it just annoys me, is back in the 80s and the 90s and before then, there was guys with 4 and 5 girlfriends or whatever. It's like, how do these guys, like, keep up with all of it, you know? Now, the cool thing is, open marriage and ethically non-monogamous or whatever. You know what I mean? How do these guys, how do they have the money to do it? How do they have the time to do it? Sam, how? How do these guys do it? I am just not enough of a gigolo to be able to handle 2 at a time, 3 at a time. But these guys have no problem. You see these guys whistling, walking down the street. They're like, you know, it's a great day. Look at this sandwich I just made for myself. You know, they're like, oh, I just got done banging 7 chicks over the last 11 days. And my girlfriend thinks it's great. What's going on, world? You know, like, how do these guys do it, Sam? How?
It's
Sam, you know what I'm talking
agreements.
About. Don't name names. But you know what I'm talking about. Sam, you know what I'm talking about, but don't name names.
I'm not naming anything or anyone or any space. I'm just saying it's all about agreements. So I'm going to assume, hopefully, that whatever agreement is made amongst 2 or 3 or 7 people is something that works out for these 7 or whatever. I'm not like that. I am happily married and stressed out as usual. So I don't think I can deal with having 7 boyfriends, because that's just stressful thinking about 7 boyfriends. So that's not for me. But kudos to you if you want to do that.
Sam, like, you've been married to Chris now, like, what, 20 years or 15 years or a while now?
I've been with him for 21 years.
Yeah.
11 years married.
Now, do you guys always get along all the time, or do you have disagreements here or there?
We're a normal married couple. Sometimes I want to wring the man's neck, but I love him.
So then how do these people do that with 7 husbands or 7 girlfriends? if you have your arguments with one person, how do these people do it with, like, 6 others in the mix?
Well, John, you have relationships with all sorts of people. Most of your relationships are friendships. It's kind of like the same, minus the weird intimacy or sex or whatever. So, if you have an argument with someone, you work it out if you want to remain cordial or in a relationship with said human, then you will. If not, then you break up.
And more, what's the most amount of romantic partners you would like to have at one time? Long term.
Okay,
like,
long term.
Like, what's the most amount of people you would marry, say? What's the most amount of people you would marry at once?
Well, now that we know that it's only legal to marry one person. So, one person legally. But
in America, legal. But you don't live in America, Em. You live in Canada.
We make our own rules up here. The winters are long.
I think in Canada, like you're allowed to marry multiple people because somebody might get eaten by, like, a moose or a polar bear or, like, Santa Claus or something. So I think you're allowed to marry multiple people for backups. You know what I mean?
Oh, you need backups. Like, that's the worst when you're just waiting and it's like, you know, it's supposed to be back with, like, McDonald's and no one's come back yet. And then you call the spare and, it's a mess, but
that's called an Uber driver.
My Uber Eats guy. Bring me extra fries. I don't think any more than 3. I think 3 would be my limit.
What's interesting, if you read Mark Twain's Roughing It, one of the greatest, the greatest travel book ever, it ends up getting to Hawaii, and Mark Twain says in Hawaii, the women have 2 husbands. They get an old one and a young one. I mean, this is back in the day. Sam, would you like that arrangement? An old husband and a young husband, and you get them both at the same time.
Again, one is exhausting enough. Why do I want two? Especially a young one and an old one.
Well, there you have it. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast, relationship advice. If you need any relationship advice, you write to us, and we'll be sure to give you bad advice. Also, I said we were going to do end of year this week, but I lied. Deal with it. Don't trust anybody. Don't count on nobody but yourself. Next week, we will do end of year, which is my favorite end of year podcast. So today, we're just going to do a quick run and blast, gun and run, snap and whap, jump and clump, smack and slap. Type show where we're just gonna talk about some news has been a little slow, like it usually is at the beginning of a new year, end of an old year, but there's some interesting stuff that happened. For example, Integrity is re-releasing Humanity's the Devil again. It's already been re-released a few different times. The new version is out on Relapse Records. It's remastered by Arthur Rizik and follows the reissues of the first two Integrity records, Those You Fear Tomorrow and Systems Overload. The new one has a new cover. It's remixed and remastered, and also the closing track, Humanity's the Devil, is now a new version of that track. So now there are three versions of the track Humanity the Devil, which is a noise track. Humanity and the Devil is a very important record punk wise hardcore wise and music wise because Integrity first rose right when kind of the NYHC hardcore sound was kind of really in its first golden age, if you will, 1988. Cro-Mags were already around there, were huge. Agnostic Front was around, they were huge. Although Sick of It All was just starting, they were around, they were getting really big. And so Integrity kind of took that sound and added a real metaphysical, kind of whacked out, I mean, honestly, very Cro-Mags Age of Quarrel viewpoint to the music. But also, some heavy metal and some basically like folk acid experimentation and that kind of a thing. Humanity's the Devil, their third album, is kind of their first, I would say, true cohesive statement where it's based on the beliefs of the Process Church. The Process Church, of course, is the church that sprung out of Scientology, but it's basically like evil Scientology, but Scientology is already evil, so that's kind of interesting that it's the evil Scientology. And it's super confusing and it's super contradictory and really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Charles Manson was influenced by the Process Church, so was George Clinton. And so basically, actually Psychic TV kind of messed around with it for a hot minute too. So anyways, Humanity's the Devil talks about how it takes a lot from Gnosticism, how the world isn't real and we're all just manifestations of some creature that doesn't even know it exists, its mind, and that the world is a place of suffering and we're all trying to break out of this repeat cycle of suffering. And that's the general idea between Humanity's the Devil. Oh, and that humans are inherently evil, nasty things, which actually is very much parallel to Scientology and the idea with Thetans and that kind of thing. So it's all kind of interrelated to all that kind of stuff. And that's not to say the Process Church is Scientology, but it's because it's not. But it sprung out of proto-Scientology. It sprung out of the book that L. Ron Hubbard worked on before Dianetics, which is the Scientology Bible, or however you want to phrase it. And anyway, so it's pretty far out stuff. At any rate, the cool thing about the album is it opens with a track called Vocal Test, which is Dwedhalion screaming, but there's no lyrics. And it closed with Humanity is the Devil, which is this super whacked out electronic experimental track. It's not even a song, it's really a noise experiment. And so it's a really, really far out hardcore record. And I actually have some comments with regard to that, as considering next to modern hardcore. But and more, Humanity's the yes. Devil. Do you have any relationship with the record? Did you check out the reissue? And what is your opinion of bands actually completely changing tracks of original albums 20, 25 years on after they've already been established as the definitive versions?
Yeah, I like Integrity. And it's more like kind of listening to different tracks and stuff. So I don't have a relationship like really with the album. I did listen to this and I thought it was really cool and really good. But yeah, like I do find it kind of weird when bands who are like, yep, we're happy with how like this turned out, like redo the song completely like 20 years down the line. But like even when I say that and I'm kind of thinking about it, it's not really weird because a lot changes in 20 years. Like a lot changes in people's like creative process, and like they might not be super happy with how it turned out, and it's like, oh well, this song had like potential to be something else, so now I can go back and revisit it and make it how I want it to be, or again just like further the story, I guess. But at the same time, you're kind of rewriting history. I think overall, I think it's cool because you don't want to buy the same album like four times, you know, like little differences are good or big differences are good.
Sammy B, where do you stand on integrity?
So I'm not a fan. I do have a memory. I think this song or something came out on Record Store Day one day, like a million years ago or something like that. Because
I that's right. Yeah,
I do have a memory of being online for Record Store Day with my Dunkin' Donuts in hand, because that's in my contract, marriage contract with my husband, aka our vows, that I will bring him Dunkin' Donuts and or coffee every Record Store Day. And the guy in front of us online for said record kept on talking about integrity, like he was literally talking at us. So I have this very fond memory of that man, this band, possibly this record. Yeah, I'm not necessarily a fan. I do understand they're quite important to some people. I do think that, yeah, like, you know, 20 years later, if you want to redo things, you have every right to do it. It does make it interesting and needing to buy another reissue for completist, you know, record completist. It is also quite annoying for record completist because that means you have to add more variants to your collection. But, you know, that's a game of vinyl sometimes, so I get it.
I think the main purpose of this release is really to get it back on the shelves. Like, I don't know if the band said, oh, we need to re-release this album. But originally it was put out via Victory Records, but then that contract ended, I believe, in 2016 or maybe even probably 2016, I guess. The contract ended in 2016, so a label called Organized Crime put it out, and they did a really nice job re-releasing it. Organized Crime it was a relatively small DIY label, and they're not really operating anymore, so I think the purpose of this reissue and the other two reissues is really just to make it available again for fans, and I guess they figure, well, we might as well update it to a degree. So yeah, I think it's cool that it's out there again. This sounds pretty good. I think to me the definitive version is always going to be the original. I mean, there's basically three versions of the album now: the Victory version, the Organized Crime version, and the Relapse version, and they're all somewhat different from each other. I think for me the definitive one is always going to be the Victory record, just because that's what I got first, and honestly it sounds pretty darn good. But I think they're all worthwhile and all definitely cool to check out, and I think this is really just a pragmatic thing, just to, you know, get it on the label and get people to buy it again, and anything that gets bands paid and that gets people cool records in the hand, I think is good. So so I think that's what it is, and I recommend people check it out. But also, actually, I talked about how far out this record is in hardcore. Keep that in mind, because we're going to come back around to that in a little bit later while on tonight's show. Sam, Swamp Cabbage Records are putting out a comp. I think you might have played a song from this like a long time ago or something.
Yeah, so we premiered the Cover Your Idols track, which is a cover of No Sleep Till Brooklyn by the Beastie Boys a while ago. So essentially, the entire release is out now on like Bandcamp for streaming. So we have it here. So it does have a lot of bands on it. So it is like there's Higher Giant, which is like, you know, Ernie from, you know, gray area token and entry. Like, you know, he's in that band. Protagonists, they're great from Florida. After Fall, they're from upstate. Vicious Dreams, Up for Nothings, they're from Brooklyn. Cover Me Bad. Lizards, No Call, No Show. And Craig Shea, he's in Answering Machine and Cold Rex, which is another, like, Brooklyn band. And the Frontmen. So they pretty much covered, like, a lot of bands that influence their bands. I do really enjoy this. I, for some strange reason, have been in really, like, covers type of kick. I don't know if it's because my husband's now in a cover band or whatever. So now I'm listening to 90s alt rock a lot. But, yeah, it's pretty cool. People should check it out. Em, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I really like the cover art of it. Like, it's really bright, and the little creature is really cute on the cover. But yeah, like,
is that creature from something? I feel like that creature from, like, He-Man or something.
Is it?
It kind of looks like a gremlin cat.
Yeah, I was getting Gremlin vibes. But, yeah. Oh my god, Swamp Cabbage. So it's like, it's eating.
Yeah.
So it's made, it's like puffed up into the thing. Yeah, so I checked, I looked through like the list, and I was like, okay, I'm going to listen to the songs that I know first, so then I kind of like have something to compare it to for like covers. I liked the No Call, No Show cover of 20 Eyes by the Misfits. I thought that was, like, fun and really good. And but I think my favorite one was the Frontmen, their cover of Back in the USSR. It was just really, really cool, and it sounded great. And it's, like, the Dead Kennedys cover of that is really good, and that this reminded me a little bit of that, which I really liked, so... That was my favorite cover. John, what did you make of the Swamp Cabbage Records?
It's cool with these kind of things. You always wonder, like, why these bands put together to cover these different tracks. I don't know if there's necessarily any connection. However, I think it's cool. I love Vicious Dreams, so it's cool to see them covering Kiss, especially since I don't like Kiss. So it makes it a listenable version of a Kiss track for me, which is kind of cool. The one thing that I always wonder with these is like I don't think these kinds of things are ever huge sellers. So how is this labeled, like, even breaking even on these releases? They must just love doing it, you know. It's hard to market a comp to begin with, but a covers comp is even harder to market, you know. So I guess they're just doing it for fun, and that's kind of cool. Let's see here. Here's another pretty interesting story. Public Image with John Lydon is going to compete in Eurovision, and they're going to represent Ireland, and they've already released a song called Hawaii, even though the fact that they're representing Ireland. So they're going to be on the Late Late Show in Ireland on February 3 to battle it on out. And honestly, I mean, I've heard of Eurovision, but I don't actually know what Eurovision is. And also, I wonder, why is Public Image representing Ireland? Because John Rotten is a USA citizen, or at least permanent resident. And he's born in England, although I know he's got Irish roots. Are the other members from Ireland? Or I thought the guitar player guy, I'm forgetting his name, the skinny guy with the beard. I think he's from Wales, I think. So I don't know why they're representing Ireland. Although, that being said, Emmore, what'd you think of the track? And do you have answers to any of my questions? Martin Atkins, that's his name. Where's Martin Atkins from?
I don't know. I don't know where any of them are from, really. Like, I do know, like, John Lydon has like the Irish roots and stuff, but
Martin Atkins is English. Let's see who else. And then there's the guy, Lou Edmonds. That's who I'm thinking of. He is English. And Bruce Smith. He is English as well.
Yeah, that's really weird. Why are they going for Ireland at that point? Like, is England too competitive? Do they think that they have an edge here?
Well, could they just say we're like Czech Republic or something? You know what I mean? Like,
I don't know how your vision works that way. I assumed you had to be like a citizen of the country you want to represent. But yeah, I don't really know. That's really interesting. I wonder. I've never watched Eurovision, but I've seen like videos of it and it looks crazy. Like it's just bonkers. I want to watch it because again, you see so much stuff. Well, like Maneskin, right? Like they won Eurovision, so that's why they're everywhere now. And they're from Italy, and I think they're all Italian, so that was cool. But yeah, so Public Image Limited, they have to like battle five other bands or something. People have to vote them in to be the representative. Then they have to go and like perform the song if they get voted in as representatives. I can't picture what they'd do if they got in. But yeah, I did listen to the song. The song is like, it's good. It has a very like dreamy element to it. It's very like sad. It's very like heavy in one way. But it's like trying to be light, if that makes sense. And kind of mask some of that, like let some through, but not kind of the full force of it. But yeah, like it's very emotional. Like John Lydon's voice is like he sounds good. Like the emotion does come through. So like I saw it described as a love letter to his wife, and also that in his words, it's dedicated to everyone going through tough times on the journey of life with the person they care for most. It's also a message of hope that ultimately love conquers all. And while I know that the sentiment is with his wife and doing something that he thinks is nice for her and preserving their relationship, just the love conquers all coming from somebody who did support extreme hate in recent years is very hypocritical, and that's something that really rubs me the wrong way. I don't know if they're going to win. I don't know who else is competing to represent Ireland. I didn't mind the song, but I don't know if it is going to have the impact, I guess, for Eurovision. Sam, what did you think?
So it's like the song. I'm not a fan of it, but then yet again, I'm not a fan of him. I still have his character on Masked Singer stuck in my head,
Oh.
which does make sense why this song came about because, he did do Masked Singer to kind of, cheer up his wife or make her remember, have memories of good things and stuff like that. I do think that this is really sweet of him that, this is kind of like an ongoing thing that he is doing. I do think it's very, very confusing that he is doing this for Ireland and the song is called Hawaii. I was trying to figure out like how you get selected to be represented for Eurovision, because Eurovision's like a contest, right? And I was like, I don't think that there's anything about you have to have heritage in any of these places
Oh,
to
yeah.
like, whatever. I think it just has to be that the folks in these places want you to represent them, if that makes any sense.
Oh,
Because
okay.
I can't figure out why else this would happen this way. But yeah, it is, I would have to say the song itself is pretty different than what I would think he would actually put something out as, if that makes any sense. Yeah.
I think it's interesting and cool when Lydon does like emotional track like guys like Jello on Lydon and even like Joey Ramone who are kind of weird. It's you never really know what they're thinking, so it's cool when they do emotional tracks and open up. I thought this track was kind of cool. I did think it did that weird thing that a lot of 80s post-punk does where it's like kind of like you know, post-punk and heavy and sonic, like heavy sonically. But then you stop and like, wait, is this just adult contemporary? You know, bands like Roxy Music did that a lot, or even like the pop group, or even like Eno. You're like, this just sounds like adult contemporary. Like where's the actual post-punk side of things? I thought this kind of sort of walked around that, except for, you know, Lydon's got his very unique timbre. So it roots from that. I mean, Lydon's had a lot of bullshit stuff. It was a real bummer when he went full on Trump, which was so lame. But I can't hate on the guy. I mean, he's made so much good music. And he does really seem to care about the people in his life and his wife. And he's funny. Like, when he was a Masked Singer, he was so – I thought he was just so funny and just so John Lydon. I wish that was the John Lydon, this John Lydon. I wish this was the one we got all the time, except for the one that went full-on Trump, which was bizarre. And so, I'm cutting him some slack. I think he's an amazing artist, and I disagree with him on a lot of points. I agree with him on some stuff. And, do I think this song's a number one killer, number one with a bullet? No. I am curious as to what Ireland thinks they're getting out of it and how this qualifies as Irish. I guess maybe because Lydon has Irish roots, or it might be a kind of thing like America's Got Talent. Like, the funny thing about America's Got Talent is none of the judges are American, and on average, the winner is not from America. So maybe it doesn't even matter. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's called Eurovision, but you could be from wherever. I don't know. I think it's cool. I think Lydon's. It's cool that Lydon's still making art and still trying to make unusual stuff. Sam, let's play a track from Swamp Cabbage. What should we play?
I was actually going to play a song by Iron Sheik.
All right, what do you got?
Castles Numbskulls, because it was actually the anniversary of the death of Rob recently, and I miss him dearly.
And we are back, and let's talk about Cox Bar. Pirates Press Records has just released a tribute to Cox Bar, even though they're still a band. And M said it was a surprise covers compilation. She got attacked in the comments. How dare you, M? How dare you say surprise and not just say a sudden release? You ruined your website, M. You ruined it.
Gives me strength.
We see a lot of Pirates Press and Pirates Press related bands. Barstool Preachers, very Pirates Pressy. Agrolites, Ratchets, Great Two, Drowns, all extremely Pirates Press bands. Susie Moon's on it. She's Pirates Press, and also Interrupters are on it. And so, I think it's. Here's the thing with Cox Bar. Everyone loves Cox Bar, and I was blown away at Punk Rock Bowl multiple times. That like Cox Bar is bigger than like Flag, and they're bigger than like pretty much any other band at Punk Rock Bowling. Like Cox Bar, and to me, Cox Bar is fine, but they're not amazing. I think they're kind of, you know, the songs are kind of the same, and they've got one really good album that's really only really good for about six tracks till you get bored of them, and the other albums are all kind of imitation of that first album. Yet people absolutely love and adore Cox Bar. Sam Barrett, is it me or is it them, and what did you think of this tribute record?
I think this is great. I actually do listen to Cox Bar.
Really? All right, Sam. Tell me, why is Cox Bar so great? And are they just a placeholder for The Clash because The Clash aren't around for people? Tell me, why is Cox Bar so great and why do people love them so much? I'm not going to argue with you. I'm genuinely asking.
I really think it's just because they're fun. Like, it's just fun punk, you know? Pretty anthemic, I think. So when this got posted, I was like, oh, yay! Plus the fact that this Interrupters cover is damn good, and the Ratchets did. I love the Ratchets, by the way. I wish I can see them soon, but they never play. the Ratchets, they contributed something to this, so, and I did listen to that, and I did like it. Yeah, so I do welcome this. I'm not sure if my husband pre-ordered this. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. I'll talk to him about that later.
And more, where do you stand on Cox Bar and the tribute record? Does the tribute record make any sense? Because there's one Clash tribute record, which in the 90s was like really big. It's got like No Doubt on it. It's got Ice Cube on it. Sam, remember the record I'm talking about? It's called like London's Burning or something. A tribute to the Clash. You don't remember that one?
No.
It was like the tribute record. I'm seeing if I could pull it up right now.
Wait, when did it come out?
Burning London, the Clash tribute, 1999. It's got Ice Cube on it, no doubt. Third Eye Blind, Rancid, Mighty Mighty Boston, the Indigo Girls, 311, Afghan Wigs, Cracker, Silverchair, and Moby. So it's really all over the place. But I mean, like, it sold so many copies, that tribute record. But the thing is, like, tribute records, especially like single band tribute records, they're so often so uneven. It's like, yeah, like honestly, like, no doubt covering the Clash is awesome, and like Rancid covering the Clash makes sense, but like Silverchair or Cracker covering White Riot, like, I don't need to hear it. So, and more, are you into the single band tribute? Do you think this is cool? Do you enjoy Coxbar?
Well, with this, I think it was supposed to say surprise release, and it just came out as surprise. But yeah, it's for
surprise. You're a dickhead.
See, this is what I'm going to do. I tried to respond to one person the other day, and it blocked my comment. No, it wasn't. Good. I wasn't saying anything bad. I was just like, they were like, why haven't you covered this thing? And it's like, we covered it last week, and I put the link in, and then it blocked me from commenting. Oh, God. I was like, thanks.
And don't get down in the dirt with him. I mean, I get down in the dirt with them once in a while, but just I've made my terrible choice in life. You don't need to make the same choice.
My New Year's resolution is try not to read the Punk News comments.
I don't read any of it, and I don't even listen to whatever podcast we do. I'm sorry, only because I don't want to hear the bad out of it.
Oh, yeah, so, like, it was for their 50th anniversary as a band. That's why they did this, I guess. And I was like, wow, I didn't know they've been around for 50 years. Like, Coxbar, that was something kind of cool. I don't mind them. Like, they're not my favorite band. Like, again, I don't mind a couple of songs. I don't have any of the albums. Like, they're just okay. And, yeah, like, I've looked up different – I like some of the bands that are – doing covers, like The Drowns are pretty good, like Susie Moon's pretty cool, like stuff like that. So, like, I checked out, I didn't like the Interrupters cover at all, I couldn't get into it. Grade 2's Road to Freedom was okay, and I really liked Susie Moon's Platinum Blonde. That one was really good. I think she knocked it out of the park, and like kind of put her own spin on it instead of trying to be Coxbar. But I think it's cool when a lot of bands who like band together and cover a band that has meant so much to them and put a lot into their covers. Like, that's one thing that I noticed, like, listening to it, was everyone seems to genuinely care about the band and about the song that they're covering, which I think is, again, the key, to it. But, yeah. Surprise that goes out. John, what did you think? Oh, sorry.
Well, here's what I think. Sam, do you think No Doubt will ever release another album again?
No. This is kind of like the same logic I have with like NSYNC. I'm like, Gwen Stefani is just. I saw Gwen Stefani live, and she does sing, huh?
When?
Like maybe 5 years ago. Like, I think I used one of those like weird Live Nation free voucher things to go for free.
How was it?
It's great. Like, she is amazing, minus the fact that she thinks she's Japanese. Yeah. Look that up. Okay. But she does like put in No Doubt songs in her set, which I really, really appreciate, because, you know, a person like her could just not play No Doubt songs, and unfortunately,
she didn't through 2012 on her first two or three solo records, she didn't, but then I think she started doing that when it was clear they weren't going to get back together.
Yeah, well, I saw her when she was, like, on tour with Eve. So maybe that might be a thing, because it was kind of like a throwback type of like vibe I got. But yeah, no, I don't think that I think she's big enough of a artist, like, that they may not get back together and do, like, a full tour unless it's, like, there is a reason. Like, maybe, like, you know, they turn 50 or something, like, you know, like, one of these things. Yeah. She might be, like, the Justin Timberlake of, you know, one of my favorite bands. And also really think she's Japanese.
And do you think No Doubt will ever put out another album or even ever play another show?
Ooh, I am going to say no. I have that feeling. I just feel like, well, they put out the one that had, like, Settle Down on it. And then
Push
they disappeared.
Shove. That's 2012.
Yeah. And then that was it. So I don't think so. I think everyone's kind of doing their own thing. And yeah, I'm going to say no.
Sam, why? Why did I not go see No Doubt on the Rocksteady Tour? Why? Why?
I don't know. I can't tell you why. You should have.
Here's something that maybe we'll be complaining that we didn't go to in the future. Maybe we won't. Coachella has announced this new lineup. And it's a bunch of pops. I mean, it's a bunch of pop music. Bad Bunny, Blackpink, Frank Ocean, Gorillaz. Pop, 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 pop. However, there are a few punk and punkish acts. Blondie, Sogol, and Scal are playing, as well as Destroy Boys. That's an M-more band. Linda Lindas, which I believe Sam likes a lot. The Gardener playing, and Sleaford Mobs are all playing. I guess is one of the notable things about this is this is the vast majority of this is pop and hip hop. There's almost no rock on there at all. So the fact that these bands are on there, is that like that rock is still popular, or is that rock is ending? Also, Blondie, I've actually been surprised by like placement of a lot of bands on a couple of posts. Like Blondie is like smaller than like Burna Boy and Kehatrana, and the same as like Becky G. I would think Blondie would be listed higher than that, but maybe because but they're not.
Well, I think it depends on the demographic of humans going to Coachella, and it's probably not me, you, or M.
Who is going?
I don't know. I would only want to go for Saturday because I want to see Blackpink and Linda Lindas and Sophie Tucker and I can't even read this tiny, 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 tiny print. Oh yeah, Scal. Yeah, Scal's on Saturday. Yeah, I'll definitely do that if I, you know. But I also don't want to spend the money for Coachella because you know Coachella's Coachella.
How much is it? Did how much it is? Is it like crazy expensive now?
I think it's crazy expensive. Let me look it up. Jeez.
Oh, it's not on sale yet. But let's see how much it was last year. It'll probably be even more expensive this year, right?
Yeah.
So, Coachella 2022 ticket cost. And more. Would you go to this? Are you excited for this? And what do you think of them putting like hardcore punk acts on with mostly, you know, pop, mainstream pop bands?
Oh, I got the price.
What is it?
Last year. Let me guess.
Do you have this year or last year?
Last year. It's 2020.
Okay, I just saw it. All right, Sam, go ahead and guess. What do you think it was last year?
Is this a single day or all days?
I think it is for 3 days.
For 3 days. I'm going to say $800. And I'm wrong. Is it higher or lower?
So it is lower.
Oh, that's surprising.
Yeah. So pretty much last year for the 3 days, it was $474.
Oh shoot.
Before fees.
Okay.
And that's before whatever housing you need to figure out, tent or not tent.
Oh right, that's this one.
Yes, that is this one.
Oof.
In the middle of nowhere in California.
And the food
is
really expensive.
Hold on. Yeah, I think you could camp.
Ugh.
But I think it might be glamping. Hold on.
Ugh. Yeah.
Ugh. No, like, not would it make me not go at all.
Not hotels. Yeah, there's also like hotels and stuff. Yeah, no, this is just a lot, man. Like if ticket prices start at like $500, that's a lot. But thinking again, like look at this lineup. It's like I'm sure Bad Bunny's guarantee is not $3,000 that you're paying for. So I get it. But then again, I don't need to go to Coachella. Yeah. I think Blackpink is touring, so I'd rather go pay stupid money to see them on tour and not at Coachella. So we'll see what happens.
Sam, would you pay $500 to go to any festival that was 3 days?
How much is Fest these days?
Like 40 bucks.
No, I think it used to be 40 bucks.
I'll look it up while you think. Let's see. Fest Gainesville ticket cost.
Yeah, like
250 bucks.
Yeah, I think my max is like $300 for things. I also like if you look at the lineup of Coachella, it looks exhausting. There are so many people like to see, and I'm sure it's like multiple stages because I think I like watched when Beyonce was on Coachella.
Yeah.
Turnstile was on Coachella once, and I was like trying to like dial in to find that. I think it's too much. I think I would pass out. I don't think I want to pay $500 just to nap all day or stand on my feet all day, but I'll definitely pay like $300 to stand on my feet all day.
M, how much would you want to go to this, and how much would you spend to go to a festival?
Ooh, this I would not go to because, like, there are some bands that I'd love to see. Like, Blondie would be cool, Soul Glow, Scowl,
like, yeah, two out of three that you could spend $14 to see.
That's the point. It's like there's a lot of people on here that I wouldn't want to see. And it's way too expensive, like, to justify going. So I would not go. The most I would spend on a festival for a 3-day festival, ideally it would be like under $300 because I don't have a lot of money and I want to get the most out of that. So my ideal would be a bunch of bands that I really want to see playing a really cool festival in a nice location where you have access to like good food and like you can take in your own water and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to travel like super far. That would be my ideal. And you don't have to like you show up and they just slather you in sunscreen. Like they just have a giant like paint roller and they just go whoop and on each side and you're good for the day. That would be part of it. That would be my ideal one. How much would you pay?
You know, I'm getting cheaper as I get older, and a turning point in my life came. I told the story before, so I'm just going to be very briefly. Is tickets used to be actually tickets for everything in the 90s were actually like pretty cheap. Like Beastie Boys were like 40 bucks, Rolling Stones were like 75, or yeah, they started at 45, then they were 75, and so like everything was like 40 to 75 for like big name stuff, you know. And then thanks to the Rolling Stones and Madonna and Roger Waters, ticket prices shot from 75 to 150 and then up to 300, and then they stayed there for a while and they got kind of dropped back down, but now they're shooting way back up again. So whereas like the entry price to a show now is like 150 bucks, which is crazy. So one time I almost spent $300 to go see just the Rolling Stones, and I ended up not spending because I got a cheaper ticket. I have a complex story I've told before, and as soon as I clicked purchase for the $300, I felt so stupid. I felt like such a sucker. It's like you're so desperate to see Mick Jagger and Keith you're going to spend $300 for 2 hours? It's like, what a loser. I felt so stupid, you know. It ended up I got my money back because I got a cheaper ticket, which made me feel a lot better. So I'm not about spending a ton of money to go see bands. I remember like when the Misfits first reunited, people were spending like $1,000, $1,500. It's like, man, it's like, have some self-respect. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just a person. You know, they're not a deity. It's just a person. So for me, it comes down to what's the maximum amount I would spend for a multiple-day fest. The maximum amount I would spend for a multiple-day fest is $300. If I spent more than that, I would feel pretty stupid. I would definitely feel stupid spending $500, $600, $700 for something like Coachella, and you got to fly on out. I think $100 a day for a fest is pretty reasonable. A little bit more, maybe, because it is a lot of bands. But once you start getting into the crazy, crazy prices, you're kind of just a sucker because, I mean, the people that invest in these things, like, make tons and tons and tons of money. So it's not like it's all going to cost. A good majority of it's going to profit, or not majority, then a large minority of it's going to profit. So, you know, it just made me feel kind of stupid if you pay a lot for tickets. So now I'm at the phase of my life where the cheaper that I can get in, the better. And then, like, when I went and saw Roxy Music, I paid $70, which was the cheap seats, and they ended up selling, like, one-tenth of the seats they thought they were going to sell. I could have bought a $10 ticket outside and literally got a $400 seat inside because there's that few people there. So anymore, I'm again spending a lot for shows. The cheaper I can get in, then I get in. Except, and this is the truth, though, is if you go to an arena show or something like that, if you get, like, the worst seats, you're just wasting your money because you can't see anything. And you can't hear anything, so you don't want to get the worst seats, but not the you know, oh, here comes a sucker seats either. You know what I mean? So reasonable, I guess. And if something is crazy, crazy priced, then I'm just not gonna go. One last story. Zulu, who are on tour with Off, or will be on tour with Off, have just released a new track. It's called Where I'm From, and it features Pierce Jordan of Soul Glow and Obiama of Playtime. And Zulu was they got a new record out on March 3 called, on Flatspot Records, called A New Tomorrow. And Zulu is one of these bands that, like, people are like a hype band. They're a band that people are really getting hype about and are excited to check out. And in the video for Where I'm From, it has Eric Andre, who is one of the buzzy comedians these days. I don't know, and more. What's your perspective on Zulu? What'd you think of this video and this band?
I like Zulu. I think they're really good. I found out about them last year or the year before. Flatspot Records released their two EPs together, and I checked those out, and they were really good. So they're one of the bands that are on my radar, just like waiting for them to kind of do something. So this is the second single. They released another single with the album announcement in December, late December. And it's really good too. But yeah, like, they're just doing really awesome hardcore, and like, the singer's voice is awesome. This song is really cool too, because it has Pierce Jordan of Soul Glow, who like also has a really, really, really awesome like voice, especially for hardcore. And Obioma from Playtime. I haven't checked out Playtime, but I really like the feature in the song too. The video was fun. It was cool. Like, they're it's like an old like computer kind of setup, and they have like videos playing where like the band is like in a group of people, and they're singing, and they're like kind of dancing, and then Eric Andre pops up, and he's like mouthing the words, and he's dancing, and he's like doing all sorts of cool stuff. And Pierce Jordan shows up in like another little window, and there's little things like that come up, like error codes and different things. So I thought the video was really interesting and fun that way, just because there's so much going on, and I'm sure I missed like a good amount of stuff. But yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing the new album and seeing what they put out.
I'll take the counter side. I just think this is kind of just generic hardcore, and there's a lot of generic hardcore out there, like we were talking about integrity earlier. The cool thing about Humanity's the Devil is it breaks the rules. If you talk to guys like Carly Flanagan, he talks how there were no rules, and it's frustrating that there are now rules in hardcore. And even Carly Flanagan gets blowback from, quote, breaking the rules, even though he invented hardcore, one of the main inventors of hardcore. Integrity is so cool because they are aware of the rules and then purposely break them and sometimes use them. And, you know, but I mean, all over hardcore right now, there are so many bands and it's like that are just cliche upon cliche upon cliche that like just take the rules and blow the rules up to the biggest view and then just stay firmly within that framework. And everyone loves it. It's like, I remember Adam White used to love this singer or still does. Oh, what's that guy's name? B.A. Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a song about how much he hates Sublime. I love Sublime. But he was like, I remember Sublime the first time around. I'm not going back to that shit. It's like, I remember hardcore from the third time around, really. And it was cliche then. And for some reason, all the young kids, you know, 22 to 26, 27, are really into like this very cliche, very redundant, done before form of hardcore. And there's a lot of purposely mean mugging, which just looks so silly to me. and it just like you're playing dress up. That's what I feel, you know. And so I, and not that Zulu is any worse than any of the other bands doing it. They're as good or better than most of the bands doing this purposely cliche version of hardcore. But I'm not interested in cliche stuff that's been done before. So if people dig them, that's fine. I just feel as though they could push themselves further and be more interesting than they are. I think they've got the ability to do it, but I don't see it here. Sam Barrett, what do you think?
So this is not my thing most of the time, you know, like whatever you want to call those power of violence or because I do love hardcore, but not necessarily this type of stuff. But I do understand why this is very important right now. Like, this is a predominantly Black group of people doing music that not a lot of, you know, Black people are doing. So, like, I do think that this is quite important. I do think that, you know, this is breaking some rules in the sense that, like, you know, now there's, you know, like, you know, I have friends and even my husband, like, you know, for years, we're not seeing our representation on the stage. And now we are, you know, like, you know, I have the Linda Lindas, I have little girls or ladies on stage doing things, great things, you know, and that's why I will always back them. Because they are, in my eyes, you know, showing me that we can do this. You know, so these guys, I do find it hilarious that they're very, I guess, right now on brand with 90s throwback stuff because, you know, their video was literally giving me so much AIM, like, you know, me running home just to talk to my husband, aka my boyfriend back then, on AIM instead of actually seeing him in real life, like, you know, vibes, like all of these weird screens. I do wonder how they got Eric Andre to do this. I was like, is this like them paying him to do cameos? And they gave him specific instructions. Mouth these words to this music or, you know, dance. Like, you know, or are
I have a potential link, Sam. Eric Andre lives in SoCal and he hangs around with a lot of artists, including Jesse Michaels and Ross from Ceremony. And those guys are connected. And so maybe there's some sort of a connection there. Also, he likes Scal and Scal's on Flat Spot Records.
Cool.
Well, I do think that this is great that he is involved in violent hardcore music. Yeah, so I do think that this is a thing that we should keep an eye on, and I do think that this does hold some importance to some people. So I do think that this is an important thing.
Well, they have it, Sam, with the closing words on Zulu. I will be seeing them when they open for Off, and maybe I'll change my point of view. We'll go from there. I don't know. Anything else you guys want to talk about, or you guys want to play a song, or what do you guys want to do? Because next week, we will be playing the end of year picks. Sam, are you excited for the end of year picks, my favorite episode of the year?
Yeah. I think we'll be doing a lot of talking. Maybe that, maybe more music. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Okay, well, and more, any closing words for the listeners?
What's a good one? If you're in a polyamorous relationship, make sure everybody is on the same page.
There you have it, Sam, with some very 2023 words. I will close that with some very 1996 words. This is integrity doing psychological warfare. No, Praxis. No, Jagged Vision of my true death.